Thank you for staying with us. My name is William Crawley, and we're going to have a conversation with you, I hope, about the film, even though I've had some red wine. And we're going to do that with Andrew Snedden, who's here to my left, and Phil Harrison. Andrew's a cultural historian with the University of Ulster, who's written a number of books about witchcraft trials and from the 17th century, particularly, and the role of religion in some social and cultural developments. Phil Harrison's a novelist and filmmaker. His first novel, The First Day, published to great acclaim. So let's welcome them to the stage. I don't know what your reaction to that was, because it was funny, it was exploratory, revelatory in some places. Some very surprising characters may challenge your image of what's going on with the Satanic Temple. Let me get your first reaction. What do you make of it, Andrew?
I thought it was a great film, and, you know, it just... the imagery that they were using just is just evocative of witchcraft trials, you know, and demonology from the medieval period onwards.
Oh, you better say more about that.
Well,
what's the connection to witchcraft?
Well, obviously, holding something in Salem, you're making a statement, but kissing the devil's backside, that's oscum infam, and you get that from the late medieval period onwards, and it's witches' sabbats, basically, you know. So a lot of the imagery, whether subconscious or conscious, was derived from witchcraft imagery from the medieval period onwards in art, but also in demonological writing. And that just, I mean, because that's what I do for a living, you know. That's my day job, so that's what hit me straight away, you know.
The irony point at the very end, Phil, that's that the state response is actually accurate, isn't it? This is an ironic movement.
Yeah, well, is it ironic? I mean, I thought it was a very funny film. It's obviously quite watchable. I was sort of disappointed with the Satanists. I thought I kind of wanted a bit more. I thought.
Why so?
Well.
What were you expecting Satanists to be?
Satan, in history, Satan, I think religions grew up, and all religions have a version of Satan, sometimes in very different ways, but Satan always tends to represent within in religion something that we know to be dark within ourselves, and that we don't quite know what to do with. And I feel that's a very, very important part of human history, that we recognize that there is a destructiveness that is part of who we are, and we don't know what to do with it. And so religions have created this version, and we call it Satan. And
that's Christian propaganda.
Is it?
It is.
Do you think there's nothing darkness in
you? No, it is. It's a Christian take on Satan. Their take on Satan is a narrative, an image. They're not theistic. They don't believe in any metaphysical background to this. Their take is, this is about a character within a narrative challenging a totalitarian idea, which is religion, a totalizing idea, and challenging the special place of any particular religion in society. So it's humanistic, it's secular, it's pro-science, it's positive. Their equivalent of the Ten Commandments, hardly anyone could disagree with them. They're very tolerance-focused ideas, aren't they?
Yeah. Yes. I mean,
so maybe you're too Christian about it.
Maybe, but what I'm kind of saying is, I think there is a loss if we lose the capacity to talk about what we traditionally have called the satanic or evil. I'm not trying to make a case for a particular version of that, and certainly not trying to make a religious case for how we understand it or who gets to say. I think there's something about the anti-authoritarianism that I really liked and I immediately took to. I think that's very important. But to lose the capacity to talk about the satanic or the overwhelmingness of the darkness that we know to be within us. Luther was one of the first big critics who understood the satanic to be capitalism. And so Luther...
I don't know about that.
He did. Yeah. Luther's early writings are about the turning of bodies into objects. Mm. So he was then... Most Protestantism came after him, rejected that entirely. But the idea that whenever... Freud called it the death drive. There is something within us that tends towards destruction, and that historically the use of the term satanic has meant that. They're doing something very different, and I think we can talk about that, but I think there's a loss whenever
they're doing is straightforward from the medieval period onwards. The devil is the inversion, the binary inversion of anything that is held good and holy, and that's what they're turning on their head, you know, and you will see that. That's why you kiss
the mic.
That's why you, yeah, I'm not used to speaking in mics. But that's why you you kiss the devil's backside. That's why you stamp in crosses. It's the inversion. So, and I think what they're doing is very straightforward enlightenment. You know, you could put these guys in the 18th century, because what they're saying is religious secularism, judicial law. It's straightforward. I mean, and what they're actually doing, you could take it back to the Hellfire Clubs of the 18th century. It's okay, it's stupid rich white men getting drunk, right? But what they're also doing is creating a statement against established religion by inviting the devil in. You know, the leave in Dublin,
for example. Which they don't believe in, obviously. I mean, I'm going to disagree with you as well.
That's all right.
Because I don't think that's what they're doing.
This is two glasses of red wine speaking.
Yeah, I know. But I think that this is a break with this darkness-oriented understanding of the satanic. It's a complete break with it. They're taking the imagery of the satanic, yeah, but they're breaking with that, and they're moving into very positive territory, very light territory. They're pushing for tolerance, diversity. They're pushing for liberal democracy. They're not simply saying, let's take what Christianity or Judaism says, invert it, and make a case for the opposite. You know, so a case for murder in place of thou shalt not murder. They're certainly not saying that. And in that sense, maybe you could say they are a product of a Western Judeo-Christian culture, because they've taken the same values, right, of that culture, but they've just changed the metaphors. They've changed to an ironic image of Satan.
And do you think that's a good... The question is, what is gained by that and what is lost by that?
Well, I think there's clearly something gained
in American context.
Yeah, well, what's gained from it is when you have a culture that pretends to have a separation of church and state,
yeah,
but which is in fact invested so much with it, and a culture which claims to defend religious freedom, then you can challenge the pretenses of that by simply saying, well, how far do you go with it? Let's have Baphomet. Let's have a statue of that. Let's challenge how much you really do believe in that. And what they're really trying to do, of course, is to push for secularism. Not for Satan, but for secularism in the guise of Satan. That's what my reading of it, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, but why use Satan? Is that an effective tool? Is it just
because the Christians are obsessed with it?
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk to some lawyers who defend people on death row in Alabama or Arkansas or somewhere, I mean, I've spoken to some of these lawyers over the years, interviewed them, and say, you know, when I'm making a case for someone to commute this sentence from death row, I don't quote Shakespeare. I don't talk about the quality of mercy dropping from the heavens. I quote Jesus. I quote the Old Testament, because that's the reference they get. Same reason. So.
But I wonder then, so the one moment I felt that we talked about something that I would traditionally, what we would have called satanic in the film, or in the past, happened in the film, and it was whenever they referred to the paedophilia scandal in Boston. Yeah. And there's a moment whenever we do need to be able to use a term, whether we call it satanic or not, that was satanic. So the question is, something evil happened there. When I say satanic, I don't mean there was a Satan out there who made these things happen. I mean, there's something abhorrent that happened there, and that if we... The question then I'm left with at the end is, if we don't talk about that as evil, if evil's now something that can run after schools clubs, then what? How do we talk about that?
What do you need to use the word satanic to describe that very human,
yeah,
abhorrent thing that happened?
Well, I don't even have to.
Why can't you use the word Christian? If it was Christian churches where it was happening, and why use the word satanic?
Because I think that within Christianity or any religion that has that dark figure, there's an awareness that the goodness is mirrored by this darkness, and that they're not so far apart. So it is not a Christian act. Even if Christians do, that doesn't mean it's a Christian act. So we need a... Do you think it does mean it's a Christian act?
Do we have another microphone? Do I only have one microphone? Can I get another one? Yeah, let's get you a microphone, yeah, so we can hear you properly. I love this attitude, by the way. Don't wait for me to get in there. Go for it, please. Yes.
It was done by Christians. They weren't Satanists. They weren't saying they were Satanists. They were Christians. They were evil, but they were not Satanists.
That's true.
So
it wasn't satanic. It was just evil.
Okay, so I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. I'm saying that we need down a language. Traditionally, evil's enough. Do you think evil's enough?
Well, evil is socially, culturally conditioned. You know what is evil? You know,
yeah.
I mean.
The point is evil and the satanic came out of the same vocabulary, right? We're now wanting to separate. I don't mind separating them. I'm just saying
it is definitely Christian, yeah, and Judeo-Christian, yes, vocabulary. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, we have to have a conversation about that, don't
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because you don't have to be mirrored in Christianity to have a notion of abhorrence, moral abhorrence. Evil's a very difficult term,
yes,
I think. I think it's a very complex term. Because things, you know, what does it mean? It's a really bad thing that you've done or just a bad thing? What does evil actually mean? Does cheating on your taxes, is that evil or is that just, you know, unfortunate? What does evil mean? Is it a qualitative difference? Is it a substantial difference? I'm not sure what people mean when they say evil.
And it's a dangerous one as well, because if you say somebody's evil, then you can put them beyond moral responsibility.
Yeah.
Sorry to get back to the witches, but that's what you
remove
did with
their own personal responsibility.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Or moral responsibility.
And in that sense, that's not a helpful thing that would
no,
be
no. If you call somebody evil, you know, you can do anything you want to them.
Psychopathic, you might say today.
If I could just go back to something that you mentioned before, why use the word Satan? Why call ourselves Satanists? There's two reasons for that, really.
Pull that mic a bit closer, please.
Lucifer means light bringer. It means questioner. Satan was thrown out of heaven in the biblical sense, which we don't believe is true, but it's kind of an allegory. He was thrown out for questioning. That's what we do. We question. And also, we use the word Satanist because it forces people to investigate. It forces people to say, well, why are you doing that? It forces people to look, the right people to look beyond that and say, well, why are they actually, what are they actually doing? What do they actually stand for?
That's Thank why. You. I think that's exactly how the Satanic Temple would understand what they're doing. Mm. They understand this metaphor, this narrative in the scriptures of Lucifer as someone who is standing up against a totalitarian force and saying, I'm not prepared to be a slave and I'm not prepared to simply respond to what you're saying with faith. I'm responding with questions and I'm responding with challenge. Now, many people are educated these days to stand up against totalitarian forces and to ask questions and interrogate the world, not simply to accept the world. Would you describe that as a Christian education or a satanic education?
Neither. It's a secular education.
It's just a secular. Yeah, yeah. Why are you balking at the use of the word satanic for that education?
I don't know. It's just, I think just historically as well, you know, just the use of the way that the satanic has been used in the past, you know, and especially
But we're not,
for,
we're not
you know,
allowing the past to determine that. Words change their meaning over time, don't they?
Yeah. Well, they do, you know, but I mean, to me, you know, it was always, you know, in the past, you know, in the last 300 years, it's always used in a pejorative term. You call somebody else satanic. So I actually liked the fact when they talked about it was approbation, people, you know, and taking control of that. So, I liked that.
And the word Christian started as an insult.
Yeah.
And Christians did exactly the same thing. They subverted that insult. The word Methodist began as an insult.
Yeah, they certainly did.
And they subverted that and owned it and turned it into a positive meaning. That's what you see going on in this temple, isn't it? Next question. Or comment, please.
So I really like the film. My comment or question is, part of the tenets are the idea that reason and that these are the enlightened people and that this is an enlightenment movement. But then I just wonder, why are they adopting all of the kind of marketing tools or all of the sensationalism that is really the problem with a lot of politics in America at the minute? I mean, why, if they're this movement towards reason and enlightenment, why can't they stand up behind that? Why do they have to use the sort of working with CBS or all the strategies that politicians are using, like fake news and nothing's really true? Why can't somebody just say what they truly mean and say that maybe we can all be rational people who can work this out together, as opposed to having to do hoaxes all the time and adopting the same methods that Trump uses? So that was my main issue.
Very interesting. Yeah, Andrew.
Well, would anybody listen? I think that's what they're saying. They have to. You know, they just get lost in the white noise if they don't do something shocking. And I don't know whether it's effective. I agree with you. I don't know if it's actually an effective way to do it, you know.
Well, the danger is if people don't take you seriously. If you're just doing meme warfare and GIFs and ironic statues, you know, no one will take your ideas seriously. They'll just think, as one of the people said in the film, that you're just trying to be irritating. And they are trying to be irritating, no question about it.
And you alienate a lot of people. I mean, there was nothing in those tenets that I found remotely problematic, but there's a deliberate alienation of me and lots of other people who might otherwise be attracted to what you're saying. So I'm interested in, what is that provocation? Why is that provocation even necessary? Now, maybe in America, we're living here, maybe in America, I think it probably does feel necessary at times because there's such an obsessively over-religious culture. So maybe if I was living there, I'd feel much more empathetic in that way. There was a question I had just, I don't want to have you as the representative, but there's a question. If someone were to come to, I mean, one of the things that comes across, there's a really natural human drive towards community and connection with people, and that seems very clear in that, and that there's nothing unusual about that. What about people who would come into a context, a satanic context, so defined, who would have more dark aims or ideas around what they think they're getting into? Does that ever happen? Do people come along and want, and they're interested in cruelty and death and
absolutely,
and so on.
Yeah,
it does happen.
Oh, absolutely.
And what do you do in that context?
Very smartly show them the door. I'm not with Satanic Temple. I'm with another Satanic group.
Just hold
that
mic a little closer. They need to be.
Sorry, I'm with another group. We started out affiliated with the Satanic Temple. We've split off.
Oh,
now.
You're split. You're a breakaway. Split, it's just like a Baptist.
Yeah, sorry, Northern Irish.
No, it's UK.
Even our humanists here split. Don't worry, everybody splits.
We are sort of gathering pace around the world.
Yeah. What's your group called?
Global Order of Satan.
Global Order of Satan, yes. GOS.
Go Satan for short.
Oh, Go Satan.
I like it.
We have a Facebook page. We have people constantly messaging us asking if they can sell their soul to Satan so they can get rich, famous, you know, married, all of that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we tell them whatever you've been told about that is not true. There's no such thing as a deal with the devil. And here is a link to our website so that you can read what we believe in. And then they never come back.
And you don't actually believe in the existence of a substantial metaphysical being called Satan?
Definitely not.
You're not theistic?
No.
So you're a humanistic, secular, scientifically orientated worldview?
Secular, definitely, and definitely science-based.
But you also use mythology to make the point. Because Satan's a mythology, right?
There is that mythology, and it's very striking. It's very instant. And it does capture people's interest, and sometimes that's for a good reason, sometimes it's not. But like I say, it definitely weeds out the people that we want to talk to. Right. It weeds them in. Yeah. You know, it definitely is a signpost.
Okay. Anybody else want to make a comment, a response, question, anywhere you want to go with it? Gentleman here, and then one in the middle. Feel free to put your hand up at any point. We'll get to you.
I find these guys to be brilliant, and the movie was brilliant, but I think they've stolen somebody else's idea. I am an ordained minister in the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster, and hopefully some of you have heard of it. And it was founded because a gentleman called Bobby Henderson objected to the compulsory Christian religious education that was going on in his school.
When was it founded?
By when? Oh, yeah. It's in America. It's from America. But it was a guy called Bobby Henderson.
Yeah, but what date?
Oh, a few years ago now. I can't remember when I became ordained. Some time ago.
They've been going around since the 1980s, haven't they?
Well, 2013, I think.
They've been forming up since then.
All right. Well, maybe they were first. I don't know. But anyway, I'm just reminded of Bobby Henderson and the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. And it's the same idea.
Do you do weddings, bar mitzvahs?
They do in America, yeah. The big campaign is to be allowed to wear a pasta colander on your head for official photographs. But few people get it, but not many.
At the minute, is there no right to wear a pasta colander if you wanted to?
There is. There are some states in America which allow it.
Really,
there's
a law against that.
I think somebody in the UK. Somebody in the UK.
Won't be for long.
All right. Thank you very much, Reverend. Yes, gentleman in the middle had his hand up earlier. Yes, get a mic to you. You're not ordained in anything, are you? Oh, good man.
No, the last speaker mentioned about the imagery. And it reminded me greatly of our last visit to America, where we hit accidentally upon a Comic-Con meeting in Salt Lake City. And there were lots of people dressed up like that, like the devil. But the film actually touched upon the whole business about separation of church and state and the tenets, and how similar the tenets were to Christian tenets in many respects, but there were one or two that were noticeably different, particularly the tenet 3 about the inviolability of the body. The inviolability of the body, the Satanic Temple declares as being a principal tenet, that you have got, nobody is responsible for it except you.
Yes.
But in fact, that runs counter to most other formal religions, whereby the body is actually not yours alone. Mm. And there's a connection there between hedonistic behavior and the detriment to humanity by being abusing your body.
Right.
And that was one of the things that was different. The other element of the film that struck me was that lots of imagery was actually directed against Christianity per se, inversion of crosses. So there was an element, certainly, as you said, William, to be antagonistic.
Yeah, the gadflies, aren't they?
Yeah, to be antagonistic. Yeah. But the point of actually calling themselves Satanists, whenever the question was asked, why Satanists? The best answer that they came up with, well, that was, we couldn't come up with anything else.
Yeah.
You know, which was limp. And at the very beginning, one of the founders remained in silhouette. Yeah. So that actually told me that they weren't willing to stand up for what they really believed in.
Mm. I thought that was a bit of humor, though.
No, it was actually disingenuous. Yeah.
But they all use pseudonyms. They're all anonymous.
Well, they use pseudonyms in the way that drag queens use pseudonyms. You know, they've got real names and they'll happily give you their real names, but they like to play with it.
Mm.
There's a performative dimension to this. But that's a really interesting point about bodily autonomy. And I think you're absolutely right that the main religious traditions of the world do not have that idea of bodily autonomy, because the idea is that God is Lord over your body and, you know, the body is the temple of the Holy Spirit. In the case of Christianity, you've got to follow the rules of that ownership, whereas they have, as you say, an autonomy tradition, which I think more and more people today would share, which is a libertarian understanding of the body. If I want to pollute my body with drugs or alcohol, that's my business, or smoke, that's my business. If I want to have an abortion, if I'm carrying a child, that's my business. If I want to end my life because I have unbearable suffering through assisted suicide, you should help me, or through euthanasia, that's my business. A lot of people would share that view, but I think you're right, that's a break from the religious tradition where they come from. Andrew?
Well, I mean, do they share that? I'm from Scotland, you know, and I would see Northern Ireland as more religiously fundamental in certain senses. So would a lot of people actually share that view that you've just said?
I think so.
Yeah. Is it becoming more and more? Well, I mean, it was just, you know,
the courts obviously share it, because when someone has been arrested and prosecuted for participating in assisted suicide, they walk from court.
Right.
And the court's not.
They tried
to
put up a commemoration for the Isle Magee witches, the witchcraft trial in 1711 and 2015, and there was a huge media storm over it, you know, because it was encouraging worshipping Satan. Yeah, I know. But it was still carried.
We've got literally 3 minutes left. So one final point. Anybody down to say anything? I shouldn't put it that quite as Satan in this film. Everybody, right there. Let's get your mic. Yeah, comment or question, up to you.
It's a comment. Actually, I took issue in the film with the Satanist.
Can you hold the mic really close?
Right. I take issue with the Satanist in the film who said that atheism was boring. And I would just like to challenge the myth that you do not have a moral code unless it's affiliated to some kind of religion. You can have a moral code without being a Christian or a Satanist or a Muslim or anything else.
Yeah. That's true, but atheism is often boring, isn't it?
No.
I mean, it is.
Why is it boring?
It is. I mean, I meet a lot of atheists. Atheism is often boring. I mean, atheists, particularly in Northern Ireland, atheists tend to come from a fundamentalist Christian background into one of the humanist or atheist groups here. And they often come across as rather obsessive kind of people. Whereas, I mean, they've gone in a different direction towards a more mythological take on it. But, I mean, we need to have a conversation about humanist values of the kind you're describing, moving away from simple contradictory approaches. Hang on, let's get your mic if you get.
I would like to.
Can I just say once in the last year? But I take your point. Yeah, no, it's true. If you want facts,
I would like to contradict
once
William
in the last year.
I would like to contradict William as well and echo what the lady said here. I think that atheism doesn't have to be boring at all, and I'm an atheist, but I'm also not someone who's dismissive of religion. In fact, in some ways, I call myself a Christian atheist in the sense that we all live by stories and myths. So there is no such thing as a way of living scientifically. We don't literally measure the ground as we walk down the street. We have faith that it will hold us. There's all our interactions, all our ideas around love, we don't weigh them up scientifically before we enter into these things. I don't mean they're not scientific, and I certainly don't need a God to tell me they exist. But what I'm saying is that there are myths that underpin and almost every interaction and every real thing that I experience in my life, mystery and awe and love and humor and all these things. I don't mean there's a God. I don't believe at all that there's a God who creates them. But I mean that I experience them. My experience of those is mythological. And so that's why I go back to the previous thing I was saying at the start. I wasn't arguing that we should be Christians. Only Christians can understand evil or good. What I'm saying is that these ideas of what we call, what we've come as human beings to call good and evil, have come out of a context. And the danger is that we dismiss religion because we don't believe in it anymore and it's not scientific. But actually, that once was the best science we had to understand who we were as human beings. It wasn't trying to understand what atoms were. It was trying to understand what does it mean to be good? What does it mean to love your family? What does it mean to not love your family? What does it mean to escape your family? All these questions are crucial to us. And I don't mean they're not scientific, but they're not fundamentally scientific. They're emotional, they're mythological, and they're underpinned by what we do with language. And so the language you use in that context is actually really important. I'm not arguing that we save the word satanic for a certain thing. That wasn't my point earlier at all. I'm just saying that if we lose the capacity to talk about that, then we lose something that's really important that science can't give us. Because it's rooted in language and the experience of language. So that would be my problem with that tenet. You can't live scientifically. Science might be the best way to measure lots and lots of things, but our active experience of the world is experiential in a mythical, awesome way. I don't mean awesome in an American way. Awesome way. And language is really, really important for that. I'm saying that as a novelist, but it is. And so the language that's embedded, and that's why these myths and these symbols and these traditions that are used or subverted, it's really important. They mean more than they seem to mean. That's what I would...
Well, you're missing out magic, you know? I mean, it's always been a magical universe that we've lived in. Whether we believe in fortune tellers for the last 500 years, or cures, or charms, or cunning folk, you know, who heal, or, you know, or witchcraft. And nobody's talked about modern pagan witches as well, you know? So the idea is just science or religion. You know, there is another way.
We could go on all night, couldn't we? Okay, you're
yep,
really...
you've got one last point. Yeah. What you've just described is, I think, philosophy, is it not? You know?
Oh, no.
What I just described?
No.
I would say that's philosophy. But religion, and science are all the same thing in some ways.
I would say it's not.
That's the former philosophy teacher talking there.
Yeah. absolutely not philosophy. But, I mean, when you say there's a place for these things, like cures and the holy wells and all the rest of it...
Well, there's a place
for everything. What do you actually mean? I mean, do you actually mean... this is potentially true stuff, or that people like these traditions and get a sense of meaning from them? Because it's not true.
It could be true.
It's not
true. A lot of people believe in it.
Do you think in...
I'm not saying I believe
astrology,
in it.
We're talking about
do.
Astrology, holy wells, cures, the traditional kind of...
There's different kinds of truth. So think of the kind of truth.
Oh, for goodness sake.
If there's a kind of truth that says the glass is on the floor, right? It's a descriptive truth that describes something that's there. It's kind of obvious. But if you have a child and you say to that child every morning, you get them up and you say to that child every morning, you're shit. And then you get them next morning and you say, you're shit. It's not true. But do that often enough and it'll become true. No, it's not true in the way that the glass is on the floor, but it's true in that you perform some kind of truth because language is effective in that way. And that's... So the idea that we can talk about truth in some simplistic way seems naive. There's different ways. And so when someone takes a different course of action in their life because a fortune teller tells them something, right, doesn't mean the fortune teller is true, but their life becomes different.
They're going to throw us out in a second.
And it doesn't mean it's bad either.
I'm finding it very difficult to stop this conversation. Okay, final point. All right. Then we've got to stop. We really do.
What if we talk about using science?
I'll give you my mic.
If I could give maybe one example of living scientifically, whereas as opposed to living versus faith, anti-vaxxers. I mean, that's, you know, so Satanists, non-theistic Satanists, guaranteed they're going to be pro-vaccination because science says vaccinations save people's lives. Whereas people that are based on faith will say, well, I think God's going to save me, or, well, I read this story, or, well, I saw on Mum's Net, you know, blah, blah, blah. So there's that, there's a belief in faith, there's a belief in science that's where you'll find accuracy, I suppose, more than anything else.
All the Christians involved in science will disagree, obviously, and there's a lot of them. Thank you very much for a fascinating conversation on a Saturday night. Sure, what else would you be doing? And we'll thank Andrew Snedden and Phil Harrison, and thank Penny Lane and the great production team behind this superb documentary, Hail Satan? Thanks to all of you. Enjoy your red wine.